finds you listening to Irish Radio Network USA. And I am delighted to welcome William O'Connor. Actually, make that Bill, because that's how my guest is referred to and known as. A partner in Thompson and Knight LLP, well known in the Irish community, Irish American community, for his philanthropic work. But let me welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Adrian.
Now, Bill, first of all, tell us a little bit about your own Irishness, your own Irish background.
Well, you know, it's a mixed story. I mean, my parts of my mother's family came over around the time of the American Revolution from Clare, and then, you know, other part then they were Hayses, mostly Hayses and Butlers, and then our Shea side, my mother's maiden name is Shea, came from Tralee, and they came over first in the famine, and then my great-great-grandfather went back and was born actually back in Tralee, and then emigrated back again to the States. So so that's where they come from. My father's family hails from North Kerry. The O'Connors hail from North Kerry, and we have some relatives also from Cork on my late grandmother's side. So we're definitely from the West.
That's for sure.
We're definitely from the West, and not too difficult, different stories from other you know, Irish Americans. My father's great grandfather came through Quebec, and we're not sure how he got into New York, to be honest with you. But mm-hmm. He came down and they settled in Brooklyn eventually. And there's an interesting story about my grandfather William Joseph and my grandmother Lucille. They were both he was orphaned. My great grandfather was, and grandmother died in a buggy accident somewhere around Prospect Park, and he was kicked around the families, and he met my grandmother when she was a half orphan at a Staten Island orphanage. He met her playing the piano when they were teenagers, and he ran away and joined the military, served in World War I, got married to her, and that was the beginning on my father's side. But it's a fascinating story, and if you look back, the fact that, you know, they came from almost nothing, and I feel pretty lucky to be where I am today. And you know, the old story about one generation, you know, one step further each generation, and I hope that keeps going with my sons. But anyway, that's kind of our history.
Good. Now, where did you grow up yourself?
I grew up around, my father's family, of course, is from New York, mostly the Bronx. My mother's family is from Waterbury, Connecticut, and the surrounding area, and so we were kind of the wandering members of the family. My father was in the military. When I was born, he was in the Navy, and so I was actually born on Pensacola Naval Air Station down in Florida. And then he left the Navy when I was about four and a half, and we moved to of all places, Norman, Oklahoma, where I lived till I was just about 11. He worked for the Federal Aviation Agency, and was involved with safety and crash investigation and drafting regulations. When he was involved, whenever you stick a suitcase under the front seat in front of you or close the locker, he was actually with this other Irish American fellow named Ed Buckley. They wrote those regulations back in the 60s. Before that, it was like riding on a bus. So no one thought about that. So those are two of the things they worked on when they were in the FAA. And then he took a job at the urging of some members of the Schreiber family. He took a job and came back to Washington, D.C., where I finished up and went to high school in the Northern Virginia area while he worked for the Peace Corps. And so that opened my eyes to a lot of things. But we always had the ties to New York. We always came back to New York and Connecticut to visit family and friends. And, you know, I to me, there was no other place that I was going to go other than New York City for college, which is what I did, and went to Fordham. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I went to Fordham Law afterwards, and it was probably the greatest thing I ever did. So a decision I ever made as a young, uninformed person.
You are involved in a great number of organizations, but let's kind of stick with the Irish ones.
Sure.
The Bicentennial of St. Patrick's, well, that's the old St. Patrick's.
That's right, the old St. Patrick's down off Mulberry.
And the history of Dagger Hughes, Archbishop John J. Hughes, and the Sisters of Charity, who opened the first parochial school in America, which is wildly historic in itself. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
and your involvement.
Yeah, I'm involved with that because for some reason I've always had ties with Dagger John. You know, he was instrumental in establishing many of the institutions in the New York area, and not the least of which was my alma mater, Fordham, you know, in 1841.
Yep.
And his sister probably is a little more in the shadows, and I'm kind of working on a couple of projects to draw out some of the contributions she made together with him. And her name was Angela Hughes, Mother Angela Hughes, and she was instrumental in bringing the Sisters of Charity over from Ireland and establishing, as you said, the first parochial school down at Old St. Pat's. And if folks haven't been down to see that old cathedral, it's very, very special. It's almost a one place where you can get a real timeline of early Irish involvement in that part of the world, in Five Points and in any area around it, and the school itself is a magnificent
St. Patrick's School.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
St. Patrick's School, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's right there. And the Monsignor who's running the parish, I think, did a very wise thing. The some of the convents been sold off, you know, by the Archdiocese for residences locally, but
yep.
they retained the school, and they're going to do something that we're working with him, Monsignor Sicano and others were very, very involved to try to get a spiritual learning center and a place that people can go that's in keeping with the original school run by the sisters. So it's an exciting project.
Now, the sisters, and I was not aware that it was Angela Hughes who was the founder there. And by the way, that the school itself is around the corner on at 32 Prince Street.
That's right.
And I've been there, and a number of Irish organizations, particularly the Ancient Order of Hibernians, they have, in fact, been quite familiar with that, with the school itself.
Yeah, the Ancient Order of Hibernians have been very involved, as have the Friendly Sons.
And the
plans and in revitalizing the facilities, including the old cathedral there. And without them, I don't think it would have been as successful as it's been, and without them, I don't think we'd be expecting such a great event in November. They've really volunteered and, you know, brought sweat, muscle, and money to help preserve a very important part of Irish history in New York.
Now, it was indeed from the beginnings at Old St. Patrick's Cathedral, the school, that indeed the sisters moved to found the Mother House in Riverdale, which is
that's right
world renowned actually, and that is today's College of Mount St. Vincent.
That's right, that's right. There's a story about Angela Hughes taking her brother on a carriage ride up to look at the site. She was keen on founding a school there, and when he didn't buy it the first time, she drove him around in circles and brought him back through another direction. And when he saw it later in the day with the sun off the Hudson, he decided it was a fantastic location. So she started a school there, and what was the country back then?
Wow, sure was. As a matter of fact, we got to know quite a bit initially from about Dagger Hughes, Archbishop Hughes, from the writings at the Irish Hunger Memorial at Battery Park City, and he obviously he would have been a good fellow to have around even today for to go to confession because among one of the quotes on the thousands of quotes down at the Irish Hunger Memorial, there is one, and I'll paraphrase, that when Archbishop Hughes was asked about those thugs in Ireland who were doing stuff like stealing Trevelyan's corn and then some, his response to that was that man's first obligation is to his family, and as such, man should do whatever he needs to do to achieve that goal, which was, to me, that was like a general absolution.
Absolutely, and a very modern thought for the time, right?
You can say that again. You know, particularly, and he was, Hughes himself was not exactly, he was not beloved within his own circle. There was a feeling that he was a bit of an upstart, and that in fact, you know, as an immigrant and from immigrant roots, he was quite forward, for lack
yeah,
of
yeah, he didn't know his place, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. That's even putting it nicer. You know, I was going to say he was a rabble rouser, but then.
Well, I mean, he did earn the nickname Dagger John, so.
Now, you have indeed a mutual friend of ours and an amazing public relations man in town, Tarlough McConnell, presented an exhibition. He produced and presented an exhibition at the Irish Consulate last year on the restoration of St. Patrick's Cathedral on Fifth Avenue, and featured, among other things, the Brian P. Burns collection of Irish art.
Some beautiful, beautiful art.
Absolutely. And you were very much involved and a legal advisor.
Fortunately or unfortunately, you know, there legalities involved when someone like Mr. Burns is loaning his part of his collection for an exhibition, and you're doing that on what's basically a foreign soil on the consulate offices. So there were some legal items to be worked out, and I was very honored and very happy that Turlock and asked me to help. That was a joy. You don't get to work on things that are that magnificent and that beautiful often as a lawyer. So that was a grand assignment for me.
You know, as a founder of the St. Patrick's Day Parade Foundation, and you are the chief legal counsel for St. Patrick's Day Parade Foundation, that was something, and I think to this day, a great number of people would not believe that with the world renowned and recognized biggest, largest parade in the world, the St. Patrick's Day Parade, that the finances and that the future of that parade was kind of going from one year to the other without any reserve or any foundation whatsoever, and more power to all of those who have kept it going through all, you know, through the last 254 years. There was never any sense of security, and I suppose everybody on the 18th of March each year said, well, you know, that's fine. I'm sure they'll do the same again next year. As a founder of the foundation, were you shocked yourself to know that there was a flimsy, almost like a petty cash fund that was there, and there was nothing for a rainy day?
Yeah, no, it seems unthinkable, and just unthinkable, and because we've all grown up with the parade. It's world famous. People fly in from all over the world to see it. People come in from all over the United States to participate, and it does go on. It's magnificent how it's organized and that it actually happens and that people march up and down Fifth every day, but it has struggled for decades with financing. And what drove the mission to create an endowment, if you will, through the foundation was that, you know, the year before they came up shorthanded and they're in a position where they couldn't pay the bills, and it was, you know, approaching, and it wasn't a small sum, but it wasn't a great sum. It was, you know, less than $25,000, and a number of us from different walks, whether it's, you know, John Leahy, the president of Quinnipiac, yeah, or Hillary Byrne, who's involved with the parade, or, you know, or other folks, my good friend Jim Tynan, who's a major lawyer, Sean Lane from J.P. Morgan, we all scratched our heads and said, we all are somewhat involved in Wall Street or in endowments, and we just said we've got to do something about it. So, with the help of Cardinal Dolan, with his support, we put together the foundation. Our Thompson and Knight did all the legal work and created it as a 501c3. Mm-hmm. And O'Connor and Davies, the accounting firm, contributed its time for all the accounting work that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And we set about to raise money. And this year we raised more money in the last gala than they've raised in almost 25 years. And so it also allows the parade to go on without that stress, but it allows other things like scholarships and writing essays, all aimed at Irish and Irish-American heritage and culture, so to promote not only the parade, but to promote a lasting sense of what our culture here is. So we're only 3 or 4 years old, but we're doing what we can to preserve what's a great institution and also preserve it for future generations. I think one of the ways that the parade was being physically stressed is the fact that, you know, there are a group of very stalwart volunteers who were running it, but as they were getting older, and as the things were getting more expensive, it was getting more and more difficult to be able to deliver the parade and not have it in a financial hole. So hopefully this helps. And I want to say that the foundation is totally non-secular. It does not get involved in any of the politics of the parade or decisions. It's just there to...
Well, that's a good move.
Yeah, I think so. it's not a political tool. It's a serious endowment, you know. That's what we want.
Absolutely,
to have.
And I think also that the, you know, the added benefit to a foundation like this is that in addition to ensuring the future of the New York St. Patrick's Day Parade, that this is an avenue, a 501c3 where people can, support a lot of the other, you mentioned, like scholarships and other aspects and associated wings of the foundation.
Yeah, it's a smaller scale. Focused on New York as opposed to, say, some of the other large funds that focus on the U.S. and Ireland together. This is for those of us who are New York Irish or New York Irish Americans. It's our heritage, it's our culture that we're trying to preserve with this foundation.
Now, my guest friend is Bill O'Connor, and I do have to ask you, Bill, are you in any way, are you somewhat apprehensive, perhaps a bit nervous, that your alumni and Fordham University and your great loyalty to Fordham University, that you're actually digressing, you're slipping away at least for one night anyway, as you're being honored, you know, by the College of Mount St. Vincent, their scholarship.
Well, you know, Fordham hasn't ignored me. They've honored me. The law school in particular has honored me. There's a scholarship for international writing for the International Law Journal that they've put in my name. That's endowed and given out every year because of my involvement with that.
And that's how you thank. This is how you're thanking them. Okay. I'd buy that.
You know, but sometimes you have to be a little. You can't always have the bias. You have to be a little bit non secular. You have to be a little bit. And I think what drove me to this, Adrian, was to do this and accept this. I think Cheryl Shea is the co-honoree is also doing it for the same reason. The money, all of the money, goes to help students in need. Students with financial needs, some of them are in fact homeless, get what they need to go to a small college and get highly educated and mentored and tutored and trained and given jobs. And it relates back to what the Sisters of Charities did with the immigrants. Many of the students who are benefiting from the program are today's immigrants. So I think that it's an unusual program. It kind of rang true. So I did agree. It is stepping away from my alma mater, one night I can get away with it.
I think so. You know, on the morning of May 7th, you can slip right back again.
Put the maroon back on.
Anyway, the dinner itself, the event is taking place on May 6th, and it is taking place at Cipriani Wall Street. Black tie dinner and a reception starting at 6:30 and the dinner at 7:30.
I think it's going to be a great night. We're honored that Ray Kelly, the former police chief, has agreed to serve as the honorary dinner chair. That was quite nice of him. I think it's going to be a great group of people there. I know the Irish Consul General is coming and some other
indeed.
Folks.
Barbara Jones. Yeah.
Yes, she'll be there.
And also, of course, I think it's good that it's also great that in addition to yourself and Cheryl Shea, the New York City Police Department, you know, the men and women of the New York City Police Department are also being honored, and many would say the timing couldn't be better than right now.
I think I couldn't agree with you more. Right now we need to, especially I think the Irish American Committee, with our history in the police and fire departments, we need to show our support of our, you know, of our men and women in blue. We absolutely need to show it, and this is a good way to do it.
Bill, thank you for being for with us and what you do. And again, your philanthropic work, your involvement with many Irish organizations is deeply appreciated, and long may you continue. The one of the benefits of being involved in a slew of Irish, particularly Irish, I think it's peculiar to the Irish, in organizations is that you have as many more lined up to make sure that you don't have any spare time.
That's absolutely right. As I said right before we came on, maybe I should start learning to say no, but I just don't, and you pick up another one. But you make new friends,
yep.
and socialize and learn other people's histories, and it's fascinating.
Well, it's a bit late in the day now. Anyway, even as you started, it would be, no is not in your vocabulary. And again, we all appreciate it and congratulate you as indeed the honoree for the College of Mount St. Vincent. And again, that's taking place on Wednesday, May 6th at Cipriani Wall Street. And the website is mountstvincent.edu. Scholarship demo. Bill O'Connor, thank you.
Adrian, thank you so much for having me on. I greatly, greatly enjoyed it.
Thank you. I'm trying to say, listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.